and welcome to People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service. I'm Tallulah Berry. This is the podcast where we look for those brilliant people out there who are trying to fix some of the big problems facing humanity. If you like the sound of that, please do subscribe and rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It'll really help other people find us too. This week, how one seemingly small event in the Netherlands ended up having a huge impact on people's lives and woke the country up to a much bigger problem. It all starts with the story of a very sick little girl called Evelina, which is where our reporter, Shuku Amrani, comes in to tell us all about it. Hello, Shuku.
Hey, Tallulah.
Hello.
Hello. I want to start by telling you the story of one family in Holland. Eric, his wife, Ine, and their daughter, Evelina.
Hello.
Well.
Hi.
I'm Shuku. Very nice to meet you.
Ine.
Hello.
Hello.
Eric van den Heuvel was an ordinary Dutch pig farmer. But in October 2003, something happened which was to change the course of his entire life. And it was every parent's worst nightmare.
I'm Erik van den Heuvel from Holland. I'm a pig farmer.
In 2001, Eric's daughter Evelina was born with a heart defect. She was pretty ill and 2 years later had to be taken to hospital for surgery.
And then she find the MRSA bacteria. Only we have questions, what is MRSA?
When Evelina got to hospital, she received the routine checks for drug-resistant bacteria that all patients get in Dutch hospitals. And they found the superbug MRSA.
And then they said, oh, that is a big problem, and she cannot operate. And then start for us the big problem.
We thought when we hear about the MRSA that that was the end of our world.
That's Evelina's mum, Ine.
Because our daughter was so sick, so ill, that she has need the operation. But she cannot come to the hospital. We can't understand that.
So MRSA is also known as a superbug, right?
Precisely, Tallulah.
It's a type of bacteria that's resistant to antibiotics. And I guess it's extremely dangerous if it spreads in hospitals.
And that's why they sent her home. But there was a twist to this story. The doctors found that this strain of MRSA was also carried by all the members of Evelina's family. And, as it eventually turned out, by around 50% of all pig farmers around the Netherlands. Now, this pig MRSA, as it came to be known, was spreading rapidly from pigs to farmers to the community and then to hospitals, and thousands of people became infected.
Okay, hang on a second here. How was the MRSA superbug getting from pigs to people?
Okay, so let me give you a bit of context. Now, Eric and other farmers in the Netherlands were feeding their pigs antibiotics every day, which is pretty standard practice in many countries. But the pigs had then built up a resistance to antibiotics. And what Evelina's situation showed was that this was putting human health at risk. Before this point, no one realized that livestock MRSA could be passed from animals to people. And it was through farmers' contact with pigs and also people eating pork that the infection was being passed on. Now, what you need to understand is that this is all about resistance to antibiotics. And this was a big wake-up call for the whole of Dutch society. And alarm bells started ringing.
Okay, Shuku, if it's cool with you, let's pause for a moment and look at the bigger picture here. People in the Netherlands realised there was a huge problem with antibiotic resistance, and it was being passed on from animals to humans. So what we're really talking about is the fact that there's been a worldwide increase in antibiotic resistance. Basically, we're overusing them. And now some common infections are not responding to antibiotic treatment anymore. Just a quick science lesson on antibiotics. In 1928, the first antibiotic was discovered by Scottish scientist Alexander Fleming, and he called it penicillin. And since then, we've become dependent on them, using them to treat everything from pneumonia to tuberculosis, and for aftercare when you have an operation. And now some bacteria have developed a resistance to antibiotics and evolved into superbugs. like the MRSA, that little girl Evelina had, Shuku, right?
Exactly. Now, superbugs like MRSA are life-threatening, and they're very hard to treat. And it means that people can die not from the original disease, but because they can't fight off an infection. And I didn't realize the magnitude of this problem until I spoke to this man.
I would say that it's way bigger than the threat of terrorism. And of course, part of the policymaker problem is that it's not as visible as some of these other remarkable threats to human life that we have today, but they're certainly much bigger and can multiply at a scale of much bigger than we see with other challenges, including terrorism.
That's Lord Jim O'Neill. When he talks, people listen. He's a British economist best known for coining the famous acronyms like BRICS, which stands for Brazil, Russia, India and China. But the reason we spoke to him is that in 2014, he was commissioned by the British government to chair a formal independent review into resistance to antibiotics. Jim O'Neill says that already today, around 50,000 people a year are dying in Europe and the US from resistance to antibiotics. That's close to double the number who died from the Ebola outbreak. And it gets worse, Tallulah. His report found that by 2050, there could be 10 million people, that's 10 million, a year dying from diseases that could have been treated by antibiotics.
We could end up with a world where we could get some kind of knee cut from just falling over, walking down the streets, and we can't do anything about that infection because the drugs won't work.
So I don't know about you, but I'm feeling like this is really scary stuff. We've talked about humans becoming resistant to antibiotics, but why don't we talk a little bit more about the use of antibiotics on animals? That's part of the wider problem, isn't it? After all, Evelina got MRSA from the pigs on her dad's farm.
That's right. Now, the wide-scale use of antibiotics in intensive farming is pretty controversial stuff. Pigs and chickens, for example, can get pumped full of antibiotics to fight off infections that can take hold in overcrowded farming conditions. Now, in some countries, antibiotics are also given to fatten animals up, because they can do that, although that's now banned in Europe. But even in Europe, the use of antibiotics in farm animals is 80 times higher than in humans. The point is that this practice of giving animals antibiotics is making them and us more resistant. And it can get into our guts through the meat on our plate.
Oh, well, that sounds delicious.
Mm.
Shuku, well, why can't farmers just stop using antibiotics? Surely that's the solution. Goodbye, superbugs.
Yes, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But it's not so simple to get farmers to change their ways. And the reason is that they're worried about their bottom lines. They fear that reducing antibiotic use would lead to their farm animals dying of disease. And many of them are antibiotic skeptics, kind of like climate skeptics. So they don't accept the link between farms and human health problems. Although the fact is that the vast majority of scientists believe there is a link.
Okay, so Shuku, you were telling me the story of Eric and his daughter Evelina in the Netherlands. Let's go back there.
Yes, that's because the Netherlands is a huge success story. They've managed to reduce the use of antibiotics in animals by 65%. What's interesting is that they used to be the highest users of antibiotics in livestock in the whole of Europe. So that's why it's being called the Dutch success model. And one of the key figures in this story is Eric, Evelina's dad, because what happened to his daughter got him on a mission to change what he and other pig farmers were doing in the Netherlands.
And then I said, we must work together with the hospital for look where it's coming from and how we can it destroy.
And so he went in search for an alternative. Hetty van Beers is a director of the Dutch Veterinary Medicine Authority, and she remembers the time the story of Evelina spread through the farming community. Eric went from town to town talking to other farmers with one single message. What happened to him could easily happen to them if they didn't do something about it.
And then he started to be a kind of ambassador and to warn farmers. And then his main topic is that they have to change something on the farm. And then the second topic was that you could use probiotics to prevent the use of antimicrobials.
So what did Eric end up doing differently on his farm? And what are probiotics?
Probiotics are basically good bacteria, which balance out the bad bacteria rather than trying to kill them. And the big change that Eric made in his farming practice is that instead of routinely using antibiotics in animal feed, as he had done in the past, he started spraying his animals with probiotics. And he and his family even used them on themselves, in their house, and me. It smells quite nice. It smells like lavender. You've just disinfected my mic.
Not that effect. I'm spraying the good bacteria on that.
You spray it all around your home.
Yes, and, everywhere.
And this acts not as an antiseptic. It doesn't kill the bacteria?
No. Only that we work together with bacteria. Yeah, we take this product everywhere. In the home, in the hospital, when we go on holiday, we take, you see, we have it with us.
Okay, Shuku, what was going on there?
Okay, let me tell you. What Eric showed me was a whole range of probiotic hygiene products. Everything from house spray to a hand wash, deodorant, washing detergent and skin creams that they use in the home for personal use to stay healthy and infection free. And on the farm, they use probiotics in the pig's water, and then 3 times a week, they spray the whole farm and the pigs themselves with probiotics. Now, that was a totally new way of thinking for them, and they are 100% convinced that it works.
After 1.5 years, and it was end of 2011, we have 95% antibiotics reduced on the farm. 95%. And also, we are all of MRSA negative in the family.
Okay, so let me get my head around this. Just by using these sprays, they had a 95% drop in the use of antibiotics on the farm.
Yes, indeed, that's what he told me. And he also said that this was actually no more expensive than using antibiotics to keep his pigs healthy.
Right, so this sounds like a huge success. He has healthy pigs, an MRSA-free family, it's not costing him any extra money.
Yep.
So was this the big solution? Did this work to change the Netherlands?
Actually, no. Despite all of this, Eric said that it's been very hard to convince other farmers to take this method up because there's not that much scientific proof and it doesn't deliver immediate results as antibiotics do. So only around 10% of Dutch farmers are using probiotics. However, they were listening to Eric's message about the need to drastically reduce their antibiotics. But they did it using other ways. Hello.
Good day to you.
Good day. Nice to meet you. I'm Shuku.
Hi.
Okay, Tallulah, I want you to come with me. A short drive away in the small town of Beers in the Netherlands, only a few miles from Eric's farm, is another pig farmer called Gerbert Oosterlaken.
You've been on a pig farm before?
No, it's my first time.
Okay.
I've never been on a pig farm. Now, okay. Gerbert was galvanized into action because of Evelina's case. He's another key player in this story. And his big insight was this, that healthy pigs don't need antibiotics any more than healthy people do. So first you have to make your pigs healthy, then you can reduce your antibiotics, not the other way around.
All right, so what was Gerbert's solution?
His solution actually is all about hygiene. Let's hear.
And you see our farm right here, 600 sows inside of it. And we have another stable with 2,000 fattening pigs.
Gerbert is a tall, slim man in his 50s. He's balding with a grey beard, glasses and a really friendly face. And I couldn't help noticing his T-shirt with the name of his farm in, get this, Diamante on the front.
Oh my gosh, wow.
He's quite a character. So he explained to me how his new hygiene system works.
What we changed in this new stable is the 4 hygienic zones. And in our flat ground, you see that as 4 different colors. We use in every zone, we use different clothing, different boots. So to reduce the chance that we take organisms or bacteria from the one zone to another.
So I couldn't actually get up close to the pigs because that's really part of the whole point. You don't allow people from outside to come in that could potentially bring in infections and bacteria with them. However, there is a public viewing gallery and I was able to see the different sections and the pigs through that glass screen. What he explained is that they have 4 different coloured zones, green, red, yellow, blue, and in each zone he has pigs of different ages. So when a farmer goes from one zone to another, he has to change all his overalls, his boots, everything. And the point of that is that he doesn't carry any bacteria from one zone to another. So if there's any infections on the farm, they don't get transmitted and spread around.
So Herbert's all about extreme hygiene, right? But it surprises me that he wasn't doing this before.
Yes, you'd think so, but he wasn't, and neither was anyone else. And in fact, Gerber told me that he had to have the whole new farm installed with the different hygiene systems and the different zones in place. He also told me that mixing animals up of different age groups is bad. Before, as soon as the piglets were born, they'd be taken away from their mum, and they'd be taken into a new pen with older pigs, where they'd fight, get injured, and their wounds would get infected with bacteria. So what Gerber does is he keeps the piglets with their mums until they're 10 weeks old, and that's a total change from the old system.
When you don't mix them up, you keep the flock together. They don't fight.
You and if they get sick, what do you do?
We treat them. When I'm sick, I hope that my doctor will treat me with antibiotics when it's necessary. That's what we do. When a pig is ill, we treat it. When you need it, treat it.
So you've got happier pigs?
Happier pigs. I'm convinced of that, yes.
What does a happy pig look like?
Look in my stables and you only see happy pigs.
I like that. Happy pigs.
Mm-hmm.
All sounds good. However, isn't it more expensive? I mean, he's had to build this huge new building and everything. Did it cost him a lot of money?
Tallulah, you're spot on. In fact, he told me making this new building was his biggest expense, but it's actually paid off because there's less mortality and it's made him more profitable than when he was using antibiotics because his pigs are healthy. And so are Gerbert and all his family and staff.
They are free of MSA, all of them. They are tested. My wife's tested twice. My employee's free, and I'm proud of it. Because that's what we did it for.
So, Shuka, we've heard about these two cool farmers and their solutions. But what about the rest of the Netherlands? How did this spread?
Well, that's the interesting part, because there's around 40,000 farmers in the Netherlands, and they've all got on board. Now, the way this happened is that after that big scare, sparked by the pig MRSA outbreak and Evelina's story, Herbert brought together a small network of around 11 farmers and their vets. They spent quite a few years trying to work out how to change things through trial and error and learning from each other's mistakes. And they finally came up with a system that kept the pigs healthy and allowed them to use less antibiotics. And then in 2008, the government heard about what they were doing, and they funded a 2-year program to take Herbert's network all around the country to speak to other farmers about what they were doing.
And every farmer said, how are we going to do it? No, we told them, when you do this, you get more healthy pigs, and a result of that, you don't need any antibiotics either. It's better for yourself, it's better for your pigs. What better story can you tell? You tell them that your relative is probably having a big problem, life-threatening. When you're going on the way that you do, one time he will think, oh, I have to change my attitude. And, well, in about a year, we had 80 to 85% of the farmers interested in our system. Pig farmers, poultry farmers, cattle farmers, they all were interesting because that's the main story. We have to do something to prevent ourselves, our families, and the next generation.
So this sounds very much like it was a grassroots movement led by individual farmers. But did the government's involvement make it more official? Did they get more farmers in the Netherlands to reduce their use of antibiotics?
Actually, yes. Now, the government did step up and they played quite an important role. In 2009, the then Minister of Agriculture decided to bring in some tough new policies. The government introduced some mandatory targets to reduce antibiotics in agriculture by 30, 50 and then 70%. Crucially, they also banned the routine preventive use of antibiotics in animal feed so that farmers can only get their antibiotics on prescription from a vet when they need it. Also, and this is really important, each farmer has to register and work with one vet only. So that means that farmers can't go shopping around for antibiotics from other vets. So it was a combination of all these measures and supporting people like Eric and Herbert in spreading the message to all other farmers in the country, which really brought about a big momentum and that huge 65% drop in the use of antibiotics.
Okay, Shuku, let's talk money.
If we have to.
We do have to. So Herbert made a profit. But what about other farmers? They have to make a living. Mm-hmm. They have to export their meat. What happened to them?
Well, actually, Tallulah, it didn't affect their productivity. and reducing antibiotics has not affected their profits. The Netherlands were the biggest exporters of meat in the whole of Europe, and they still are.
Shuku, this all sounds great, but I have been doing some reading, and it looks like many other countries are going in the opposite direction to the Netherlands. Places like China, Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa are predicted to double their use of antibiotics by 2030. And so resistance looks like it might spread.
Yes, and that is a scary prospect. But some other countries have also been successful in reducing antibiotic resistance, like Denmark, for example.
But it took the Netherlands years to come up with their methods. And is the world running out of time? What can we take away from your story?
Well, what the Netherlands story tells us overall is that one single event and just one or two farmers can really turn things around for a whole country. And in theory, the rest of the world could take what they've done and replicate it as much as they can on their farms. On that note, I'm going to give the last word to Lord Jim O'Neill. Now, if you remember, he was asked to chair that review into antibiotic resistance. I wanted to know what he thought was the secret of the success of the Dutch model.
I think the answer is strangely quite simple. I think a few key people in the Netherlands and Denmark have basically realized that this is a huge problem, and therefore they have to treat it with the seriousness that is usually reserved for other forms of policy, such as, you know, defense of the country.
One thing I really want to know, and I've been dying to know as I've been listening to your report, was that little girl, Evelina, was she all right in the end?
Well, Tallulah, you'll be very pleased to know that that little toddler is now a healthy, happy 16-year-old girl. And her operation was a success because the doctors were able to keep her in isolation until her MRSA cleared up, and then they could operate on her.
Hello, this is our Evelyn.
Hi, nice to meet you.
And this is her friend. She's with us on holiday.
Lovely. I'm happy that everything after is very good.
Yes, I do love a happy ending, Shuku.
So do I, Tallulah.
And that's it for this week. Please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. If you've seen a fix you think is cool, we'd love to hear from you. Our email is worldhacks@bbc.co.uk, and we're also over on Facebook at BBC World Hacks. Come and find us, where you'll be able to see Herbert and his little piglets, and Eric and his happy and healthy daughter, Evelina. If it's more great podcasts you're looking for, then why not check out BBC Trending, which tells stories from social media around the world. That's BBC Trending, also from the BBC World Service. And we'll be back next week with more cool and innovative solutions to the world's problems.
Don't take medicines if you don't need medicines. Don't take medicines if you don't need medicines. Don't take medicines if you don't need medicines. If you do, they won't work when you need them. 'Cause if you do, they won't work when you need them. Yeah, so see a doctor.